John's feeding a baby through a tube is actually feeding a baby through the tube.
Yes. I'm shooting it into a bank deposit.
Get in there, baby.
Increase suction. God, I say that so much.
Guys, the psycho's back. He's feeding another baby. When can anyone stop this man from feeding the baby in these tubes? We got a Willy Wonka situation on our hands.
Again.
Following is a Media for Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Media Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Phil Crone.
Maximum Security was robbed.
What?
It's a horse. Horse.
Oh. There were animal races in recent derby. History. That's right.
You know what they say that week? They say, talk derby to me. Like, talk dirty to me. Get it?
And Shane Settner is also here.
Yo.
We are here tonight not to discuss horse racing, but to discuss a different kind of... I can't tie that thread together. But to discuss Avengers Endgame, the recent, soon-to-be all-time box office hit. Receipt number? I don't know. I'm short on words right now. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, the domestic number is still in question, though.
Oh, is it really? Okay. I feel like we're already at the 2-point-something billion mark.
It's probably going to beat Avatar's 2.7.
Thank God.
I mean, yeah. No matter how we feel about this movie, I think we can all agree that we never have to talk about Avatar again, at least until the first of five sequels apparently come out in a few years. So, great. Relegating Avatar to the dustbin. That's all right. Endgame itself.
I mean, you all do know that they just announced like 17 more Avatar movies.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Disney's long-term plans and its domination of all media. this is a concern. Endgame itself, 22nd movie in the Avengers MC or in the MCU. I posted my review on Letterboxd today and on the website. As far as initial positions and staking out the various sides, I think it's fine. I think it's a totally fine movie. I think in the continuum of MCU movies, it's not the best, it's not the worst. It does some things very well, and there are other movies in the MCU that does what it does far, far better. But we're going to dig into it. Shane just left the theater. So I saw it opening weekend. I think, Phil, you saw it Thursday night?
I saw it opening night, yeah.
Yeah, opening night. So we've had a little more time to digest, whereas Shane is fresh as a daisy. What did you think about Endgame, Shane?
I think it's about as well done as this sort of movie can be. So, good. Corny.
Fine.
All the above.
Totally fine.
I would say fine plus.
Okay, fine plus.
I mean, it's in the good. It's in the good.
Oh, yeah. A B minus. I gave it a B minus in my review. A B minus is a totally acceptable grade. I don't believe in grade inflation. C plus, in my book, still qualifies as a good movie.
It'd be a B plus.
Yeah. All right. That's fair. We should say that Shane's grading has been all over the place with Game of Thrones. So he's a little a little unreliable. But Game of Thrones is going to come up in this conversation as
well. It's all about gut feel.
Yeah. Gut feel. Phil? How about you?
I mean, this movie is the ultimate fan service for this franchise. I think your grade on it entirely depends on how much you enjoy this franchise or don't enjoy this franchise. I can see, and that being said, if you don't enjoy it, I don't know why you'd watch it. I don't know why you'd read a review of it. This is one of those movies that I didn't even understand what the point of reviewing it on its own was, because it stands up so much on the 21 movies prior to it. I called it your mileage may vary, A to A plus. I loved this movie. I also love the MCU. So I don't know how much help my review is if you don't love the MCU already.
No, I mean, I think that's a good place to come from, because there are a lot of people absolutely love this movie. And they probably all absolutely love the MCU. So having a review saying I'm an unabashed MCU fan, and this is a damn near perfect movie, it's fine.
The way I put it in our MCU podcast we did a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago at this point, I don't remember. Time means nothing to me at this point, is basically just all they really needed to do was stick the landing to make it, in my opinion, the best MCU movie of all time. And I think they did that. I know there's definitely some problems. I totally waved them away and ignored them, and I'm sure we'll
I mean, speaking of that fandom and what you described, Phil, as how this movie and Marvel in general, specifically around this movie, view like a critical reaction. Not only was there a spoiler enforcement to a level I don't think I've ever seen in a movie before, there also seemed to be, I think it was the first time for a Marvel movie, and I could be wrong about this, where the fandom got into a pretty venomous place, where the negative Rotten Tomatoes reviews that spoiled a high 90s, if not perfect score, were sent a lot of harassment on Twitter. I notice that more in like DC movies, just because the reaction to those is generally more negative. But
yeah, the DC backlash, especially with Justice League, was swift and harsh, if I'm recalling correctly.
Yeah, whereas it seemed uglier, I think, with Marvel and the whole spoiler stuff. I haven't read any reviews, but as far as what they were able to say happened in the movie, like the pre-release reviews, I don't know if they were like, did they talk about all of the time travel stuff? Did they talk? And by the way, we're going to be discussing the entire movie over the course of this podcast. Where did they discuss the reintroduction of Thanos? Like. And again, we're going to talk about the role of Disney, but they are now so powerful that if a critic decided, fuck you, I'm going to write about what I want to write about, they could very well have been blacklisted from future press screenings, from future interviews. This is just one of the many things that makes me slightly nervous about the state of big budget filmmaking these days.
That strikes me as a little tinfoil hatty.
They have just done that with the LA Times. They have briefly said, I don't remember the specifics of the event, but there was controversy based around Disney allowing or disallowing journalists to get access based on some kind of negative reporting. But here nor there. Well,
I don't know anything about that, so I'm going to say you're a conspiracy theorist.
All right, fair enough. To talk about Endgame further, we kind of have to talk about Infinity War a little bit. I recently rewatched Infinity War before I saw Endgame. That movie is not good. I think in the scale of MCU movies, I think that last 45 minutes is bad, and I think the climax is utterly false and mercenary and manipulative in a way that shades my opinion on Endgame. But how did you guys feel about it?
I was largely it felt like you're kept at distance in Infinity War just because of all the CGI. It was so much CGI. CGI characters talking to CGI characters for long periods of time. And I think that kind of took me out of that movie, but I don't know. It was fine. It wasn't great. It definitely wasn't the best Marvel movie.
Phil, I believe you were pretty high on that as well.
I mean, I was high relative to you because I'm higher than you on all of these movies. But in terms of
let me give a little background. I've had many MCU movies in my top 20s of the year. I've probably given maybe four of them like A-minuses.
But yeah, I digress.
But go ahead.
You know, one of the things I like to do whenever I do these movies, because I'm a huge dork, is kind of slot where they rank in my overall rankings.
Sure.
I think I have Infinity War somewhere around 9th or 10th, mostly because, one, it was interesting to essentially make your main villain kind of the main character, and it may be about ostensibly his journey. But at the same time, once you get over the initial shock of it, everyone basically knew that, you know, the end of that movie was not the real end, that something was going to have to happen to rectify the situation. I don't have the same problem of quote unquote stakes that you have in this.
I do have that problem. Yes, you're right to say that.
Which we can get into that whenever you choose. Sure. But yeah, that was basically where I was on Infinity War. It was kind of the same place I was with a lot of these Part 1 movies. You know, it's like, okay, it's really going to depend on how well Part 2 is done to determine how good part one, to kind of think of how good the complete picture was. So as a 5.5 hour epic, I think it's good. I think it's very good. Yeah, at the same time, it's 5.5 freaking hours.
Yeah, or just that.
It's a TV shorter than that.
Just that statement on its own is odd. A 5.5 hour epic. You got Lawrence of Arabia, and then you've got Infinity War / Endgame.
Yeah, which point?
Yeah.
Okay. What's up with that Kissel?
Before we get into some of the pros and cons of this movie and into the meat of the plot, a lot of the talk surrounding Endgame has been about the communal experience, and you know, it's fortuitous that this is happening at the same time that Game of Thrones is going on, because Game of Thrones is like the last communal TV experience, and Endgame just, it fits very nicely with a theater experience that is also getting smaller and smaller. What was your theater like when you saw it, and did it sync up with how you were experiencing the movie? Shane?
Oh, good. Yeah, well, you know,
I mean, Tuesday night, it can't be that.
Tuesday night, it's already been out a while. It was just me and the guy masturbating.
All right, fair enough.
I'm kidding. Actually, it was really full. It was like half full. I actually had to switch seats because someone had large hair in front of me, and I'm a short man.
AMC recently introduced assigned seating. I do not like it.
Oh, you know what? I kind of liked it because I was just, you know, I knew exactly where I was going. And all the other rubes were in line buying tickets. I was like, boom, boom, boom. I know how to use a computer. So I did that.
Yes. Yeah, self-checkout and all things. One less human interaction I have. Fantastic. Sign me up.
I would imagine my disappointment when I had to hand a man a ticket. And I was like, is this the right one? Because they printed out three things. He goes, no, it's not. I'm like, shit. Okay, which one? He goes, oh, wait, no, it was. Too much.
Get it together, AMC.
Come on, man. You got one job. You see tickets all day.
That's a great story, Shane.
Phil, opening night?
So I did have assigned seating, and if you're going to go to movies on opening night, assigned seating is clutch.
Yeah, there's a good argument there, no question.
It 100% exists for opening night. Like, hey, there's John Wick 3 on TV. I'm going to be seeing that opening night. And guess what? I know exactly what seat I'm going to sit in. The opening night crowd I was with, it was definitely... I've seen a lot of these movies opening night, and it was a lot of cheering. It was a lot of clapping, but it was at the parts you would expect it to be. So it was a really fun experience, actually, especially because, again, I'm a fan of these. I'm not one to clap in any situation in a movie, but it added to the... It did not detract from the experience for me. I actually saw it again that next Wednesday. I saw it on a Wednesday at about 11 a.m. because I wanted to see it in IMAX. And that crowd was completely dead silent, and it was actually kind of weird in comparison to the opening night crowd I saw it with. So,
I saw it on the Sunday morning opening weekend in like a 80% full theater, I would say. People were into it, no question. There was clapping, as you said. The guy next to me did various fist pumps.
Yeah, that guy masturbating stopped once or twice throughout the movie just to watch.
He got a little self-conscious. I mean, or he had just done it so many about times, the assigned he was seating. Raw.
He was actually noted on that computer screen as masturbating man, and I still picked the same row.
That is.
I mean, it's been
that's a new AMC feature too, actually.
Good for that guy for getting off the couch.
Getting off. Let's move on.
Flambo. So let's come to praise Endgame a little bit. Things that worked. I think for a three-hour movie, the pacing is really strong in this movie. I think that Infinity War had the major problem of two dozen characters, 30 characters that they needed to like spend time with. So while, you know, Riley in our last MCU podcast, while Riley really clicked with Vision and Scarlet Witch and their relationship, I don't think that's a majority opinion. And I think that was one of many, many, many plot lines in Infinity War that just could not, you know, find equitable screen space. Just because of the reduced cast in Endgame and because of the increased runtime, they're able to just brute force this problem and really take their time in getting through all of the emotional beats and the action beats and so on and so forth.
Sure, and that was one of the things I said pretty early on that I liked about Endgame Infinity War is the big function of, you know, the end of that movie was to essentially clear the board for the original six. A couple other ancillary characters that are kind of fan favorites at this point or somehow key to this story in particular. And so, to your point, Endgame is a better movie because of Infinity War. as a result. Because, yes, Infinity War had way too many characters going on.
I mean, I do want to add a corollary to that, to what you said about who sticks around and who was vanished and who wasn't. It's always bothered me how artificial that felt and how it just happens that all it out of this random scenario, every time they blinked people out, it just made me roll my eyes. Like,
okay,
all of Hawkeye's family goes away. All of Ant-Man's backup people go away, so he has to stay in the quantum realm and figure all this shit out. All of the new characters go away, with like two exceptions.
Kissel, what are you going to do? Are you serious?
Yeah.
On the final
exactly.
movie of this
exactly. It's almost like this.
Are you fucking insane?
It's almost like this whole premise is fatally flawed. But
it's almost like you're thinking a little too hard about this whole premise. But just me.
Now we're into our distinctions, perhaps, in how we view movies. And this is the praise section of this podcast.
Yeah. We're talking about pacing.
Yeah.
Pace yourself.
Let's
pace,
get into it.
You pace yourself.
Yes. Perhaps I need to turn my brain off a little more. But the rules of the movie are randomness as far as who does and doesn't get vanished. So, but the movie doesn't communicate randomness. Like, it would, like, Thanos has no role after he does the snap.
Sure.
I mean, the rules apply to him, too. What if he disappeared? Just to mix
then
it up.
He just wouldn't be there picking weird spiky fruits. I mean, you know.
Someone's got to
tell you.
No,
it's an invasive species.
But yeah, without half the animals, it's easier to overgrow.
I don't know. Just in general. I know we've talked about this before, Kissel, but one of the things me and you don't tend to agree about sometimes are these sort of artificial constructs we put on particular genres. I know I got really annoyed with you when we talked about revenge films, specifically with Blue Ruin. I'm going really far back now.
Mm-hmm.
This is a review I did 4 years ago. But I remember when you were complaining, this isn't a revenge film. I'm like, yes, it is. It's just a different type. So at the same time, you're taking all of these assumptions from all of these other properties and trying to apply them to a popcorn comic book movie. It's just not going to happen. You're just asking things of the genre that don't exist in the genre, period.
And my retort to that is that within this specific corner of this genre, they have existed. There has been like internal consistency and relatable stakes in other Marvel movies. And
sure.
Again, I do want to stress that I very much like these movies. I'm no skeptic. I referenced in my review that I'm getting a little tired of them. That could be age. That could be commerce. I don't know exactly. But I couldn't shake the feeling in Ant-Man and the Wasp. What the fuck am I doing in this theater? But again, we're in the positive sections of Endgame.
Yeah.
I did like the clip show nature of the middle section as, I mean, you can't have a series of television, season of television without a clip show. That's kind of like an artificial construct as well, but they backed their way into it well. It's fan servicey, I think, in a good way. And it's just fun to watch them like spying on themselves and the introduction of other characters from earlier parts of the MCU, like Rene Russo, like Tilda Swinton, always welcome in anything ever.
Hopefully not as an Asian man again.
You know, yeah.
But it was cool. It definitely was cool to like get all of these people for like a day. Like, this is technically the last movie Robert Redford's going to ever be in. Wrap your head around.
I suppose that's true.
what a
wonderful and... what a wonderful capstone for his career.
There it is.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed this part. And I was like, oh, they're going to go back to all this stuff. I know that. And I don't remember much.
Yeah, they did.
Movies.
Yeah, during that whole sequence had a lot of really good callbacks. The big cheer in my theater was the Hail Hydra moment, of course, which is the stupidest line on the planet. Who says hail anything? But that's even there.
Nazis. Nothing
sucks me out of a movie more than when they utter those two stupid words.
They said fucking Tesseract again. I was like, God damn it. Can we get rid of that? Like Tesseract, it just bothers me so much.
Had to get that GD Tesseract. I tell you what, but
it's blue.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, but of the three segments, I think far and away the best done is the New York segment. Although, you know, the Thor of the Dark World segment was fine too. It just made me remember how much I hated that movie, but that's neither here nor there.
I mean, I remember liking Thor of the Dark World, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
I think it
retroactively improves it by what they do at Endgame, just by deepening the relationship between Thor and his mom, which was somewhat of an afterthought in that movie.
Muster up the energy to watch it again someday. It'll probably be on the background while I look at races or something.
Disney Plus will have it on there.
I own them all.
$7 a month. Come on.
Who's not buying that? But anyway.
Yeah.
You can watch the WandaVision show.
I don't know. Maybe.
I think you will.
I did also like where they leave a lot of the characters that are going to continue in the MCU. I think the addition of Thor and Nebula to like the Guardians of the Galaxy main crew is a strong idea.
I don't think you're going to see Thor hanging around with them too long, though. I think he's going to be a main act of Guardians 3. Way too big to be in that movie the entire time.
That's probably true, but just like segregating all the galactic people into the same part of the world, it seems like a good idea.
Sure, that's fair. That's fair.
As far as things that didn't work, Captain Marvel, we all saw that movie, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the weak, in my opinion, is one of the much weaker of the 22.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's the critical consensus. It technically didn't make my radar as far as how I decide what movies to go see and don't, but I went and saw that anyways just for completionist sake. Which in turn means that Disney has me.
They did it.
Yeah,
they got you.
Oh, we got Kissel.
Where was I?
You were begging me to do a Mickey Mouse impersonation.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. She's both way too powerful and a complete afterthought in this movie. Like, she doesn't have anything to offer during the big "what are we gonna do next" scenes. She stands there with no lines and nothing to add.
I don't think they have any idea what they're doing with that character.
Yes, I completely agree.
You're right.
Send her off to some other part of the world in a way that I don't think the movie should bring attention to itself. Like, it's all focused on Earth, but the rest of the universe also got, you know, snapped away. Nobody else cares about this. Nobody else has a solution to this potential problem.
I mean, the explanation is that's what she's off doing while everyone else was, you know, dealing with
Captain Marvel 2 is that movie.
I don't know what Captain Marvel 2 is at this
point. Okay, that's how much
she does say, "I'll be gone for a while." And I'm like, you're talking directly to the audience.
I mean, yeah. So, yeah, Captain Marvel, she basically has the Superman problem of... You basically have to find a way to... I mean, she has the same problem that in the MCU had with characters like the Hulk, where you had to like figure out a way to artificially sideline them for some parts of the movies. Honestly, this universe has a lot of those problems. Mm-hmm. Scarlet Witch is a huge problem. They had to figure out a way to... I mean, that's why they had to snap her out. They had to sideline her because she was been way too powerful otherwise. There's a lot of characters like that, and that problem is only getting worse.
Yes.
As time goes on. Now now if we look at our kind of what I would say proxies for who kind of your new base characters are going to be, you know, you have Doctor Strange really filling that Tony Stark role. You've got Black Panther, who's going to fill that Captain America role, and then you probably have Captain Marvel, who's going to fill the Thor role. They are all basically significantly more powerful than their counterparts.
Yeah,
so you better find a significantly more powerful enemy than one who can...
Which is exactly why these are getting more and more unrelatable.
Yes. Marvel, they should like learn their own lessons. Like, the two best villains of recent Marvel memory have been... You know, not Purple Thanos, but regular guy Michael Keaton, who is just trying to put food on his family's table. So the idea that you're going to go back to like a, again, Thor the Dark World and these super powerful time-traveling, or not time-traveling, but space-faring elves or whatever. Because you have
you mean Malekith, the Dark Elf, thank doesn't you, Phil. Do it for you?
Dark Elves, come on.
Come on.
Yeah, and on top of that, for these super powerful characters to then serve as deus ex machinas when they're most needed, it's just so fucking tiresome. I was reminded of The Hobbit at certain times during Endgame where it's just nonstop characters riding in at the last moment to get an enemy off of a hero's back, and they're back in the fight, and it's just so goddamn boring and predictable. Like, the second that Captain Marvel was like, I'll be elsewhere, you can write the movie yourself at that point.
No, that's totally fair.
Something else that didn't work is in that last big battle, the feminist fist pump moment where all of the female superheroes fight as one. Come on. I really dislike Disney, this giant corporation, trying to feed these cultural moments as a way to pat themselves on the back. I truly can't stand it.
You don't sound very woke, John.
We put an openly gay character in a giant Marvel movie. He was just a dude in a support group who has two lines, but where's my award? Where's my parade?
That's Glad. What I'm saying, John. Give us more. We love everybody.
So I'm of two minds with that moment. On one hand, I saw a lot of people who got excited about it, and who am I to stop
them? There was applause in the theater.
Yeah, so who am I to tell people don't get excited for that thing? On the other hand, it is transparent and ham-fisted, and that's about the nicest way you can describe it.
Yeah, the best case scenario for Marvel or for Marvel and Disney isn't that they bring more equity into the workplace and their film sets get more diverse. It's that girls start buying their action figures in greater numbers. So it's just all very mercenary and gross and commercial.
It's shallow.
Shallow, right? Yes.
That was probably a $10 million virtue signal.
Yeah. I mean, good for them.
The masturbating guy really liked that scene a lot.
Ooh, I'll bet. Did you go up and ask to rewind it?
This is probably going to be pretty controversial.
Yeah, it is.
Things that didn't work.
Come on, nothing. Say your stupid thing, Kessel.
Nothing.
Come on.
Nothing on my part at the ends of Tony Stark and Captain America. Steve Rogers.
You suck.
Nothing.
You suck. You're the worst.
Totally flat and nothing for me.
I agree with Phil, hey, and not John.
Kessel, why? Just random question. Why are you an automatron? Why do you have no feelings?
Yondu's big funeral in Guardians of the Galaxy 2? Waterworks. I'm just going to say that. Anthony Hopkins on a Norwegian cliff in Thor Ragnarok? Fucking got me. I am not averse to getting emotionally invested in these superhero movies.
I think you're just bad at emotions. You're the automatron trying to predict when people are going to cry, and you just, the programming went wrong. It just went haywire for this one moment. Not sad.
Come on. It's transparent from the moment that Robert Downey Jr. celebrates his, 57th or 58th birthday or whatever. He can't be doing this forever. It's transparent the moment that Chris Evans is like, I've done enough of these movies. When he says this in public, you're like, all right, so they're going to get rid of him. Can they make it worth it? Can they make it work on me? Can they make it work, especially in Captain America's sense? Who has been my favorite hero throughout his three movies. I think his specific trilogy is the strongest of the several that are in the MCU.
I would probably agree with that.
It just requires time travel is up next as far as things that I don't think worked in the movie and in the franchise in general, but
no, we're not moving on to that yet.
No, we're not. But tying Cap's conclusion into time travel, you're making me think when you should be making me feel. There it is. How's that?
You know what? That's fine. I'm more bothered by your opinion on Tony Stark's character, mostly because they use the line that really starts this entire 11-year, 22-movie saga, the I Am Iron Man line, that, you know, it really is the culmination of anyone who really has the best arc of this whole group. He really has the best. Going from this brash, selfish prima donna to ultimately to this guy that really makes the ultimate sacrifice for everyone. He definitely has a great character journey, in my opinion, from start to finish of all these movies. He has the most coherent one, and it made perfect sense for him to go out like this. The only thing I didn't like about it is that he had to talk to Gwyneth Paltrow. I don't think...
We could agree on that, 100%.
I really don't think if, you know, everyone would have had their druthers, they would have had his last moments actually be with Peter Parker, because that's the relationship I think the vast majority of people care about more.
It's good and right for his wife and partner and the person he's raising a daughter with to share his last moments with. Happens to be Gwyneth Paltrow.
Well, the problem is they give him a daughter. I just thought that was a pure manipulative thing for them to do.
In the same way that the feminist fist bump. Is
I like the elegy for start, but I thought it would hit me emotionally. But I think part of it was, I'm like, oh, that sucks. He's not gonna get to raise his daughter. And then I think it's the only reason the daughter was in there, like, because again, I'm very anti Pepper Potts. Like, we didn't need this storyline, and he doesn't need to have a daughter there for us to feel emotional about it.
Okay, I totally disagree with that, because. We didn't really talk about it in the things that worked, but I was pretty impressed with what they did with that sort of, with basically the whole leftover segment of Act One.
Yeah.
And really showing how everyone was coping with this situation. Some were obviously coping with it very poorly, like Fat Thor. But I really liked that they used one of their characters, specifically Tony, to show that some people actually came out of this better on the other side.
I'm not disagreeing with that portion. What bothered me was as soon as he left, it was out of his mind.
Yeah, it was way too easy for him. He just had to look at a picture of Peter, and that was essentially it. Coupled with the very easy solution to the problem. That it was that night. Like, that night he decided to put his family at risk, or his position in his family at risk, and also solve the major technological problem of the movie.
What do you mean by that night?
Steve Rogers asks him to help, and he says, no, I can't do that. I have too much at stake now. And then that night, while he's washing dishes, he looks at Peter's picture. He's like, well, shit, I guess I have to do this now. And then he solves the time travel problem as well.
That part doesn't even bother me.
It's very fast.
But when he leaves, he just – there's like, no – I thought there was going to be a decision, like, what is he going to do when it comes down to it? He can't risk his – you know, family, or you can't say, I'm not going to raise my daughter. But we don't ever get that moment. It never pays off. All the talk about, you know, he tells Cap, here are my choices. Here's what I'm beholden to. And that's it. He just tells Cap that, and nothing ever happens with that part.
I think it does, because that's why he does the whole snap thing. That's the needs of the many outweighing the needs of the few. Very selfish Tony Stark would not have told anyone he solved it. Threw it in the lake, like you said. Kind of selfish Tony Stark wouldn't have done the snap.
I disagree. That's always been him.
I agree with you that the arc over the course of a fucking dozen movies that had him in it is coherent and tidy. I also think he made this decision in The Avengers when he, you know, rode that nuclear missile through the portal. Like, that was him coming to this conclusion. He more or less comes to the same conclusion in Endgame.
Yeah. I mean, the daughter doesn't factor into it at all.
Yeah. And it's not less noble because he has less at stake in Avengers.
I agree.
I still think in Avengers, there's still the pretty good chance that he's going to come back from it. With this one, he knows he's not coming back. That's my opinion.
I think Stark definitely works better on me than Cap's storyline. I'm okay with them both, but I think Cap's storyline made me start thinking about the time travel issues.
I don't think we ever we didn't have to see him again once he goes back in time and doesn't hit his meeting point or whatever. We can put it together. We can put it together that he just stayed back there.
We do need that, though, because we have to set up the Falcon and Winter Soldier show, and he has to have Captain America's shield for some reason.
God, okay, so for continuity's sake, this is the show, or this is the show, this is the franchise stealing power away from the movie itself, which
basically,
is, yeah, which I am not a fan of.
Yep, that's what it was, though.
Yeah, to return...
You had to set up the entire plot of the Falcon and Winter Soldier of him trying to come to grips with being Captain America.
Delightful.
Sorry about your luck.
Before we return to Tony Stark, with the Steve Rogers stuff, he made out with Peggy Carter's daughter in Civil War. Is that his daughter, as some have suggested? Is that...
First off, that's his niece. And it could have been on her side. It probably was on her side because her name was Sharon Carter. So there would be no blood relation there. It's still freaking creepy, but there would be no blood relation. This is not a John and Danny situation.
Sure, but that still exists in the same movie or in the same franchise. And it just, I was thinking of that as he was going back in time for his happy ending. It weirded me out somewhat.
My bet is if the Russos could have that one back, they'd take it back.
I don't give a shit about the Bucky Barnes and the Falcon TV show. Give me a good, solid, unquestionable Cap ending.
Oh, is that what's happening?
Sure. I don't really know. I haven't really been paying attention.
That's one of the four MCU shows announced on Disney+.
To return to the end of Tony Stark, again, him making this sacrifice is well and good. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't know why it didn't work for me. Maybe I've just never bought Robert Downey Jr. as a serious part of this world. He's just so snarky all the time that it robs him of any seriousness. And this was further reinforced by the wet fart that was like the funeral that, again, just stretched out for so long and was so sappy and so manipulative as to steal any potential pathos from this moment.
I like the funeral.
How many cheeseburgers do you want? All the fucking cheeseburgers you can eat? Get the fuck out of here.
I hope you
see. That's a great callback.
What was to him to a moment that this daughter has no knowledge of? Like, who's the callback for? This should be a moment audience between a friend of the dead man and the dead man's son or the dead man's daughter. Not a game of spot the reference. Again, like, this is the movie servicing fandom when the emotional weight of the scene is on her. I don't give a fuck about Tony Stark used to eat cheeseburgers. Who didn't used to eat cheeseburgers?
I don't remember any reference for that. But this worked on me because she's like, I want cheeseburgers. He's like, yeah, I'll get you whatever you want, man.
Boring.
Sounds like some. I mean, that just sounds like something you would say to a kid who's mourning their father.
I don't know why it's in the movie. And the kid from Iron Man 3 does not look anything like he used to.
I was trying to figure out if that was him.
Everyone was confused as hell when that happened. It's like, who is that guy?
Did not need to be.
Is that Billy from Green Day's son or something? That's what I thought it was.
I had to look it up. I had no idea.
I was happy that kid was there because he was a pretty good kid actor. And so is the daughter. She did a hell of a job.
Compared to the amount of time they spent on Black Widow's death, it was a vast difference.
And you didn't put that in the list, but one of the
things with it. Like, I think we knew that was going to be the case. Not that she in particular had to die, but like someone had to die for them to get it. So that's fine, but
it just went by in a flash. That's the thing. Not that she died, but that it felt so unimpactful, even at the time. It felt so unimpactful. It was like, you know, this is one of your main characters that you're going to finally give a movie to, by the way. Now she's dead.
Based on who should live, as far as like whose haircut is the worst, the movie made the wrong choice.
Would you say they didn't
land it? I was really distracted by Hawkeye's haircut.
Would you say they didn't land it?
No, they did not land it. Thank you.
Yeah, the hair choice.
Black Widow, also strange. It was jarring when they flashed to her at the later time point. His is much, much worse.
The haircut?
Yeah, the haircut.
Yeah, fire their haircut.
It was just surprising.
The 2023 hairstyle.
Yes, I will say 2023 hairstyle.
I thought it was kind of, actually, I thought you were going to say it was kind of messed up when they flashed a Black Widow on the ground dead. It seemed gratuitous.
I think it's just a mirror shot from an Infinity War.
Yeah, that's all that was.
Yeah. I thought it was fine.
Okay.
I mean, you can't have a movie with thousands of deaths in it without showing a tiny drop of blood from a distance. So, other thing that didn't work for me, just introducing time travel into the world is a problem. It's a problem in the same way that any kind of resurrection is always a problem in any fantasy property. You have neutered anything that happens in all of these movies from now on, especially because it seems really easy to do.
Yeah, we solved it. Stark solved it one night, and now you have technology.
They have the resources to do it. They have the facilities to do it. They can do it with negative consequences.
The part that frustrated me is they're trying to get all sciencey about it, and then they immediately break all the rules.
I think you can get yourself out of that one pretty easily, though, to be fair. All you have to do is basically kill off Hank Pym, which Michael Douglas is 100 years old anyway. All you have to do is kill that character off and say, oh, he didn't tell anyone how to make these particles, and then boom, time travels out of those worlds forever.
Except they can go back in time with what Pym particles remain and just
continue to
find more.
Yeah.
As they did in this movie.
I'm just not huge on the time travels. Especially because, don't talk to yourself.
Clever. They're so fucking clever and snarky about it. Like, it didn't work in these other movies. This is how it's going to work in this movie.
And
we're going to figure it out.
It works like Back to the Future. Captain America might as well have sent a package of that shield at the end in a truck.
From the Libyans.
Yeah.
From the Libyans.
So, it ruined Cap's storyline. Because I'm like, how did he go back and he changed the past? And all of a sudden, Tilda Swinton was right.
Who was Peggy Carter married to?
I don't understand any. I was like, is now Cap just her side piece? That's it?
Would you like to hear my theory?
Is it he's his own husband or whatever?
My theory is we were in the two Cap timeline the entire time.
I've immediately lost interest.
And we just didn't know it. That is my theory. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Okay. It'll be interesting to see.
They don't show him. She doesn't give any reference to who her husband is. There's no pictures of him. It's very easy to just make the agreement of, hey, the young me is going to see you twice.
Yeah.
And just don't say anything to him.
That's fair.
This is not hard to figure out.
It was the most compelling part of... Steve Rogers is very compelling in my book, but it was one of many compelling things about him was that he was, you know, the man at a time. And to solve that problem...
For the better way of to have him, like, move on and, you know, like he was preaching at the beginning of the movie. But, you know, the Russos came up through the MCU directing all the Captain America movies. They want to give Captain America a happy ending after doing four movies with Chris Evans. Chris Evans doesn't want to do any of these movies anymore, so he wants to figure out a way to be completely out of the picture. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. This time travel sucked.
I like the melancholy in Captain America. And I don't know how I feel about the happy ending. Here and there, I liked him more in other stuff. He got to throw the hammer around. Good for him.
I wanted to... I think we're probably about to move off of time travel here, but I'm going to time travel back up to things that worked.
Sure.
I really liked the battle scene, the final battle scene. I liked everyone coming together. I love the Doctor Strange.
That was a big
visuals
point.
Anyway. So I was fine with that. I was actually excited at final battle. Like when Black Panther and shit showed up, it's like, oh hell yeah.
Oh yeah. That's a great scene. And I will say, the opening night, the biggest cheer was Spider-Man, easily.
Oh, yeah.
That character is going to be... Tom Holland does great with that character. He's going to be pretty, you know, heavily into these movies going forward, obviously.
Have you seen the trailer for his new movie? The spoiler trailer?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
All right. Multiple Dimensions.
Oh, boy.
Did he see it in the Spider-Verse?
Maybe. I don't understand how Spider-Verse exists alongside of Marvel Spider-Man. I don't need to know exactly.
But literally, wasn't that just a Spider-Man plot point?
Maybe Spider-Ham is in the next Tom Holland.
Well, we can always hope for that.
Number three. Who knows? I don't know. We're getting further away from it.
And the other thing that got the huge cheer, even in the Wednesday morning show I went to, was Captain America getting Mjolnir.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Which is a really good moment. That's a pretty cool moment.
This will transition us nicely into a more global cultural talk about Endgame and the MCU and Disney and so on and so forth. And Game of Thrones too, because again, these are just things that are coinciding at that exact same moment. Is there like an appreciable difference between the fan service? I think we would all agree that there's a lot of fan service in Endgame. And the fan service that Game of Thrones is currently doing, I'm thinking specifically of Benioff and Weiss's, you know, postmortems on the episodes that they do. We wanted to give Lyanna Mormont a big farewell, and we didn't want to kill too many characters because the fans love them, blah, blah, blah.
I think Marvel...
What's the difference between the two? Mm-hmm. Because I think if you've been listening to our Game of Thrones podcast, we're not big fans of what's going on in Game of Thrones these days.
Well, I am, but... I don't know that it helps that the Russo brother, or is it brothers? Are they brothers?
I think it's not important.
It does help.
I think it's not important at all.
They're not,
to know their names. They're not in charge. No director, right. No single director is in charge of any single movie. This is a producer-led series.
Okay, fine.
Disney's in charge. Kevin Feige's in charge.
Okay. Yeah. Whoever that person just said, it's helpful. He's not on afterwards going, let me explain this movie to you, okay? You fucking morons. And all the Marvel fans, our friend Phil, is probably just like, okay, tell me more. I'm a moron. I'm kidding. You're not a moron, buddy. I love you. Some of the fan service here is totally fine. It fits in with the plot. It's, I don't know, set up a little bit better. I don't know who Pepper Pot is for. That's not fan service. That's active fan assassination. That is anger at your fans.
Why was she there in the final battle? How did she know? I get that everybody else should know. They're all in the same place when they get resurrected.
Get the fuck out.
Why was she there?
To irritate me.
Dr. Strange showed up with his portal and said, come with me if you want to live.
Why would Dr. Strange call Tony Stark's wife? Like, hey, do you want to fight these aliens with this?
Because he looked at scenarios, and that's how they won.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
The fan service, my favorite fan service in the movie was probably when the Asgardians were chasing Rocket. And they're like, get the rabbit. Someone said real quick.
Sure.
I liked stuff like that. Give me that.
We didn't talk about it, but everything with Fat Thor was great. Can we just agree with that?
Yeah. I like Thor, no question. I like seeing Taika Waititi's character back in this movie. I think he's one of the rare exceptions to the directors are not in charge rule in the MCU. Like, his specific brand of comedy is all over that movie, and I think it's kind of infected Thor in particular. Like,
yes.
They understand that fucking worked, and they're gonna adhere to it from here on out. The same with James Gunn, but and I think everybody agrees that the Guardians continue to be a lot of fun in general.
Yeah, seeing Quill singing, where he looks, you know, like he looks so super cool, just like in First Guardians, then you hear him singing over it, and it's like that's actually a rare relatable moment in this movie.
That was good. That was like, oh yeah, that probably did look really stupid if you would have been just watching it from a distance.
If anyone's seen the Lego Movie 2, the continued de-puffing of Chris Pratt's action persona is the best thing that's come out of his career since he was on Parks and Rec. Like, maybe he can get away from these giant action franchises and get back to what he's best at, being fat Chris Pratt, and, you know, pack on 50 pounds and stop eating all that chicken breast and maybe get away from whatever church he's in now and become a more entertaining individual.
Great. Then you're making Long Shot with Charlize Theron and making like $8 million on your opening weekend. Perfect.
I haven't seen that movie.
I have my hopes.
I'll see it this weekend probably. Is it just a question of fan service done right? or is, the idea of fan service bothers me, especially in movies. I don't give a fuck about comic books.
Yeah, I think we were talking a comic book franchise. It's a different genre. It's not a genre that, you know, like Game of Thrones, where in the end of season three they killed half of their main characters. So, you know, I think to be fair, at least the MCU has been consistent. They've been giving those moments consistently, probably since, I would say, Avengers 1. So
fan service in general strikes me as a lazy man's creativity.
So like Iron Man 2.
That was more like franchise service, that you have to introduce all these extra characters and make the world a little bigger than it needed to be for that specific movie. But
I don't think anyone's, you know, I don't know if anyone's necessarily calling this, you know, some sort of achievement in creativity.
Well, people are calling it an achievement, no question.
I think it's more so an achievement in just continuity and being able to take all of these disparate parts and converging them into a satisfying conclusion. We're sitting here talking about Game of Thrones as being run by two guys, and basically everyone has been down on that show since Battle of the Bastards.
If not earlier,
sure. So I think to just not be impressed by the fact that, you know, they did stick this landing. It's so easy to mess up landings, just in general. It's so easy to mess up ends. Seinfeld famously messed up its final episode.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of things mess up endings, and I think it has to be commended that this nailed it so well, especially for its fans.
We are using a lot of TV comparisons. Does the encroachment of binge-watching TV-style consumption of media into movies bother you at all? Maybe I'm just a purist and a fuddy-duddy. It irritates me. And when I say, like, binge-watching TV-style, I mean the what's going to happen next, watch next episode before getting through the credits. Just that method of media consumption. Movies as content, as a great Matt Zoller site on RogerEbert.com described it. It seems like a new frontier for movies, and judging by the aforementioned Disney schedule that they put out for the next 7 years, like, that's not going to let up.
I saw that schedule, and I actually felt a little depressed, and I can't put a finger on why that is sad.
This is exactly what I'm talking about. It's not the first time they've done this either. Like, after, I think, Age of Ultron, like, Marvel set out the next 4 or 5 years of movies that were going to release, and with one or two exceptions, they stuck to it.
And yeah, they pretty much.
It is.
Yeah, they really only got rid of a couple of those.
There's something strange about it. I can't put my finger on it. It makes me uncomfortable.
Well, ultimately, I don't know how people would have felt about that for TV for a long time, because for a long time, especially with sitcoms, they were, you know, one episode to the next. You could watch, again, I'll bring it up, Seinfeld. You could watch Seinfeld completely out of order. You really wouldn't lose much context. There's a couple underlying things going on, but for the most part, you don't lose any context. And I think we all agree that with TV, the golden age of television, if you will, really started with these massive serialized shows like The Sopranos and The Wire and things like that. And I guess my point is, we've only seen it tried with superheroes, but why can't there be a golden age of movies with serialization? And that being said, why does it have to be superheroes? Why can't it get into another genre?
I don't like mixing my peanut butter with my chocolate, I guess. I mean, obviously everybody does, but that's just the comparison that came to mind. Like, serialization belongs in TV because it's built into the model.
But it wasn't for a long time. And now, granted, a big reason you couldn't serialize TV is because you didn't really have reruns. You didn't have the ability to go back and catch shows you missed. You kind of, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you missed it, you were done. So you didn't really have the ability to do that. But I think now, especially with some of these, especially with a studio like Disney, you know, basically building their own streaming service, so people can catch up on this stuff easily and relatively inexpensively, why can't you start doing this with other genres?
I'm not fucking watching Bucky and
I might. I mean, I'm not gonna watch that show. Kind of like those characters. I mean, the Falcon is in like the third tier as far as
I'm not watching Avengers that goes. That's what's gonna happen. Is they're gonna do all this shit, and I'm not gonna watch the rest of it.
I kind of think maybe they should have learned the lesson from Star Wars with all of the content that they're putting out, and you can see in the box office returns that people are getting increasingly tired of that. Maybe the
which
same
is
thing
crazy
will happen with Marvel.
That Star Wars they got tired of after 2 movies, but Marvel they didn't get tired of after 22 movies.
Because there's not enough time to chew on it. Like you've chewed, like everyone's chewed on Star Wars. Like, I mean, there's the original three. That's canon, capital canon, and everything else is just taking away from it. And also, Star Wars movies aren't very good.
Yeah, I don't think
the original three
aren't
very good.
I kind of agree.
They're fine.
Yes, they're fine. They're totally fine. Nothing wrong with a B. A B is an acceptable grade.
100%.
Maybe don't dress
fun
up
universe.
The characters from a B
fun
movie.
Universe.
I might go lower on some of them.
Fun universe. Fun culture. A lot of awesome stuff is spun out, but those are not great movies.
Yeah.
They're important movies. How's that for a word?
That's pretty good.
I
think it's good.
And a lot of film historians make the argument that they were negatively important. Like they made movies worse as a medium. And I'm somewhat in that ballpark. I kind of think turning movies into television would also make movies worse because it's the codification of franchises and intellectual property as the be all end all, more important than an individual idea or an individual writer or an individual director coming up with something that they want to bring, you know, to the screen, like tell a single story, and that's the end of it. There's nothing more to capitalize on once the credits roll.
Then
it
again,
existed in this one moment, and that is all.
Then again, this is comic books.
Yeah.
It's comic books. So, I mean, this is what comic books do, though. They've been serialized since the beginning, and they always have to find weird ways to reset things. Like you said, when people get too powerful or what have you, they'll just reset the whole whatever after the strings run out after 20 years.
Yeah, and like...
True, they've killed Captain America so many times, it's like a joke.
Yeah, and we'll arrive at that place at some point in the future with Marvel movies, I would imagine. Like, none of this shit will mean anything anymore. And this was always what a lot of directors have warned about, Spielberg included, and Soderbergh, and several others, that as the investment becomes more and more significant for these movie studios, it's not going to take that many failures for entire sections of the industry to just vanish into bankruptcy if it doesn't go well. Like, I don't know what Universal is doing these days, but, you know, the Dark Universe isn't going forward. That's a lot of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars that have gone away. Maybe they'll be fine. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll go the way of independent movie production houses, which are getting, you know, smaller and smaller. It's very worrisome.
I mean, ultimately, vote with your dollar. If you don't like it, don't go to it.
Sure. But like I said, they made me break my radar to go see Brie Larson stomp around in her movie. Last question. Does the role of Disney in all this impact how you experience Endgame? Like I mentioned, we talked about this with the artificial feminist moment, this giant corporation trying to preach progressive values to us, which, you know, are all the values themselves are all well and good, but the source feel it's fruit of the poison tree. I'm glad that they can piggyback, you know, the first openly gay character in a Marvel movie
to
increase earnings per share. Hey, look at LeFou in this Beauty and the Beast live action remake we did. He's making goo-goo eyes at Gaston. Where's my parade?
20 years too late.
It's a giant consolidating corporation that is responsible for an increasingly significant percentage of ticket sales. This is not a good development.
I didn't even think about it while I was watching tonight. Didn't cross my mind that this is a Disney.
They fucking got us.
It's still a good product. Eventually it will cease to be a good product.
The thing that bugs me more about it is all the franchises they own that they're not going to do anything with anymore. Disney's not making an Aliens movie.
Yeah.
But it's not.
As much as I like these MCU movies, they are as cookie cutter as you could possibly get. they all follow a very predictable three-act structure. It's hard to imagine Deadpool coming out of Disney. It's hard to imagine Logan coming out of Disney.
Originally, yes. I mean, obviously, there's no way they're not making a Deadpool 3. They like money way too much. But Deadpool 1 would not exist if...
Yeah, they would never take the chance.
How about a very...
Because they've demonstrated that they don't have to.
How about a very artsy Logan 2, where we just... It's just an hour and a half of filming Logan's grave.
I mean... The alternative would be like the Fantasia version of Logan, where he's like where he's conducting an opera of brooms and hats.
Oh, instead of a wand, he's using his claws.
Sure, why not?
Bango. You're welcome, Disney.
I'm in for this movie.
I mean, I would say, you know, again, no more Avatar in the top spot, but Disney owns Avatar as well. So maybe that'll be the thing that breaks their back, the failure of all these Avatar sequels.
But will people Avatar have been on James Cameron's failure before. Will Avatar 2 become Pirates of the Caribbean? Oh, no, sorry. Cutthroat Island. Just bankrupt a company.
I want to see Blue Jake Sully carry a crotch map around.
Oh, yeah.
It's very important.
This used to be Susan Sarandon's head.
Anything else? Anything else in Endgame, Stata, Cinema?
I'm going to have to chew on this a little more, but I think you've dropped me down to a... I think this conversation dropped me down to a B on this.
I dictated the agenda. I think if like Phil wrote it, it would certainly have been different.
Yeah, well, like, I can barely write, so that's...
Fair.
we'd have a very different review if I wrote it, for sure.
Yeah, we would be talking about more positives.
I would totally admit... I don't feel like I could even grade this movie. It's like asking someone what their grade is of the last episode of Breaking Bad.
See,
like, what do you think of the rest of the series?
Or asking anyone what their grade of Blade Trinity is, A+ or A++.
I mean, we did discuss the vagaries of grading these continuing properties on their Game of Thrones podcast last night. You have to grade it against what's come before, and like I said, so much of my personal criticism is interrogating how a movie made me feel. And Endgame, you know, it was appropriately thrilling. It was I laughed in a movie that I very much did not expect to laugh at. Like we mentioned, The Leftovers, only 3% of humanity got blinked out there compared to half here. You think the grief and the despair would grow exponentially, but no, not really. But emotionally,
I don't know. I wouldn't call any of the stuff going on then necessarily funny, but that's me.
There were laughs, no question.
I mean Thor. I mean, Thor was a tragic character used in a comedic way. Well, he was in a bad way.
We laughed a lot at his
expense,
his debilitating grief.
And actually probably doesn't even really give a shit about humanity. He's just sad he failed.
Yeah.
Right. Because that's Thor. No, really the only funny part of that whole thing, I guess, was probably the Hulk scene. But,
I mean, that's something I mentioned in my review that that's kind of been the thrust of Bruce Banner's entire character over the course, going all the way back to the Incredible Hulk in 2008, and he conquers this problem off screen in a flash forward.
Sure, which, a little cheap. By the way, that's one thing Disney doesn't own.
The Hulk?
Disney does not own the Hulk. Universal does.
That is strange. Is that why there hasn't been a solo movie?
100%.
All right. Wow. I would have said Mark Ruffalo not liking to do it, but the poor fucking guy had to spend the entire movie CGI bulbs in a skin tight suit.
Looked pretty good.
CGI. It absolutely did. It did. And we skimmed over the action, and I'll, again, to reference my review, Infinity War action was a lot of magic, and I can turn Drax into a spring, but he's going to come back to life, and the rules are very unclear. It was back to punching in Endgame, which is better.
Yeah,
which is always going to be
100%, 100%. Oh shit! I had one stray thought. That's gone. Just flittered into the ether.
It's a shame.
Fuck.
It's called the Reality Stone.
I might go back and watch this movie again. I don't know. It was fun.
It didn't feel like 3 hours either.
I absolutely agree. Yeah. Well paced.
Yeah. What the fuck was
it? I'll be very curious to see what the Russo brothers do next. I don't think they're doing more Marvel stuff. I feel like I need confirmation as to whether or not they're actually good directors by seeing something outside of this umbrella. I suspect they made a good community episode. They made a lot of good Community episodes, but again, that like TV directors are not in charge either. I would like to see them be in charge of something unequivocally. I think that'll do us for this episode of the Mutica Movie Club podcast. Check us out on the internet at MuticaMovie.club. Like us on Facebook at Mutica Movie Club. Stay tuned to those podcatchers for more Game of Thrones episodes. Got two episodes left in the series, and we spent 90 minutes talking about this last episode. So, you know, there's a lot of holes to poke, a lot of eyebrows to raise at the various goings on there.
A lot of wise to crack.
Yeah. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Have a good night.